Welcome back here on Can't Wait, where we are going to talk a little soccer. And with us, as always, is our resident soccer expert and the only FIFA official not brought up on corruption charges, Matt Milner. Tell us what to look for in the FIFA Women's World Cup.
Well, first of all, you can look forward to just a break from how depressing all of the FIFA coverage is.
Because, I mean, that was just so self-evident, right? Like, I mean, it's been the most corrupt organization, not even sports, but, like, in the world.
Right.
I mean, the trending topic was the FIFA Mafia, because that's exactly how they run it.
Yeah.
So, but they're actually going to play some soccer here pretty soon.
Yeah, and, you know, listen, there are a lot of American soccer fans who are still, you know, soccer fans every 4 years and get really into the World Cup.
My ears are burning.
Yeah, there you go. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that, because the reality is you have a finite amount of sports watching time in your life. It's hard to carve out the, you know, 6 hours a week that you need to decide you're going to start following the Premier League or start following MLS or something like that. So there's no shame in being, you know, a fair weather World Cup soccer fan. But what we wanted to do today is talk about, for those of you last year who got excited about following the Men's World Cup, to give you five reasons why the Women's World Cup that starts up next week might be even more fun for you and more appealing. So we're going to go through my five reasons why the Women's World Cup is going to be an even more appealing product than the Men's World Cup, which we love and is great. This is not to denigrate that product, because that's an amazing sporting event, but this could be even better. So my number one reason, it's in no particular order. It's just first on my list.
Okay. Yeah.
The United States might actually win.
Right. And that's ultimately what gets any fair weather fan. The ability to chant USA, USA at a sports bar, or just get like really into it when we're at the top of the top.
Exactly. So, women's soccer has progressed at an exponential level over the past two decades, to the point where you've now got arguably six or seven teams that could, you know, credibly win this thing. And in years past, you know, that conversation would have been limited to one or two or three teams. So, you know, the United States comes in, but not as the favorite. And that makes it interesting as well, because we get to, on the one hand, know that we have a chance at winning, but we also get to sort of be that underdog that we love being so much. Germany's ranked number one. The other, you know, kind of elite contenders are Japan, who beat us in heartbreaking fashion at the last World Cup in penalty shootout.
That's right. I remember that one.
Yeah, and then you've also got France, Brazil, Sweden, and even Canada is kind of a fringe contender. They've got the home field advantage as well. So, you know, you've got a big enough group that there should be some drama and intrigue there. The United States is starting out in the group of death.
Like we always do.
Like we always do. It's just like back in the Men's World Cup.
It's easily identifiable.
Exactly, yeah. So we've got Sweden in our group and then also Australia. So it's three top 10 teams, and Nigeria as well, who's a feisty team. But, I mean, as casual fans, don't you feel like there's something that's almost un-American about the way that we root for American men's soccer? You know, that like, it's such a different way than the way that we approach any other sporting event, where you grade on a curve, which is so un-American to me. And you get in the mindset of it still. But the idea that, you know, a successful run in the Men's World Cup is like, well, we looked respectable against Portugal. You know, this is a chance to really root the way an American wants to root, to root to win.
Well, that is something we can get behind fairly easily. And it is something that we like to get together just worldwide. Soccer is something we all do together. You don't just watch at your house. You go someplace. The Rialto has opened up during World Cup before. So you could see that happening. That makes that fun, right? I mean, that's cheering for the U.S. We'll go a little ways.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing where you're going to watch us get blown out. You know, because we had those experiences with some previous Men's World Cup where we weren't at the level yet. And that, like you mentioned, that is not how Americans tend to follow their sports. If we're not going to be great and not at least have a shot at being among the finalists, we kind of tune out. So
that's why we love the Summer Olympics and really disregard the Winter Olympics.
Yeah, because there's a lot of it. And that's why we had to invent things in the Winter Olympics, like snowboarding, that we could dominate to keep any kind of American casual interest.
Right.
But I don't see any way that this isn't a huge, huge deal this year.
Yeah. And the next reason why I think it'll be a huge, huge deal is that compared to many other international sporting competitions, these games are at great times for American fans. They're all pretty much primetime games. I mean, out here in the West, some of the games are starting late afternoon. So I think the first match in the group stage for the women starts Tucson time at like 4:30. I think it's 7.
Oh, perfect.
So, you know, you get home from work, either you DVR'd the first 35 minutes or, you know, you catch to the second half. But it's not like, you know, when the World Cup was in South Africa and you're waking up at like 3:30 in the morning to watch a game live. So I think that that makes a big difference because in today's internet world, the idea of like DVRing a game and then watching it the next morning or watching it, you know, when you get home, that is not possible
anymore.
It's
unrealistic.
Yeah, you saw that with the Sochi Olympics.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
they would try to tape delay big events, and that's just not happening. Mm-hmm. And not only are American sports fans very pushy when it comes to the quality of the competition that we are in, that we're near the top, we need it on our schedule.
Yeah,
absolutely.
we're just overwhelmed with options. I mean, the Women's World Cup is going to fall into that same cultural mix as like the season finale of Game of Thrones mm-hmm. or this Mad Max conversation that we had before we kick the mics on. Mm-hmm. There's just so much that we have to deal with that in order for it to fit into the conversation at a level that we hope it does, it has to be on at exactly the times you're mentioning. So yep. the fact that it's going to be on prime time, it's in our relative time zone-ish, that's a major win for women's soccer.
It's going to be competitive, but we can win.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And we will win, right?
Of course we will. USA. USA.
All right, so the reason number three here, and this is one that I think will be near and dear to both of your hearts, less flopping.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's very true.
And it's not just a subjective thing. I mean, if you've watched women's international soccer before, you've probably just been able to pick up on it kind of intuitively that it feels like there's less theatrics than in men's soccer. But they've actually studied it. There was a study that was done before the last Women's World Cup. And on average, when they were studying, you know, the times that the players are going down, and then they follow up and determine what their actual injury status was, the women go down without a serious injury 50% less often than the men.
That's shocking.
That is shocking.
I mean, that just shows, women are better than men.
There you go.
Pretty much across the board.
Yep.
I knew that.
And this is one of those sort of, you know, it's an interesting example of how sort of sexism impacts on-field products, you know, because I think that for a lot of these athletes, you know, competing in the World Cup this year and in women's sports in general, they're held to different standards than men are, and they're expected to be able to, you know, somehow walk this razor where, you know, we want them to be athletes, we don't want them to be like overly feminine and seem delicate, but then they're also sort of rewarded for still being, you know, displaying some kind of feminine traits. So it's an impossible walk to walk. But I think one of the benefits of that very challenging situation that they're put in is that I think that the incentive structure for flopping is really different because there's more on the line, so to speak, in terms of your reputation and being able to withhold the, you know, level of scrutiny and expectations and stereotypes that you are subjected to as a female athlete. And I think it results in sort of more integrity in terms of their, you know, their performance on the pitch.
And so much of soccer was able to develop, especially women's soccer, was able to develop this core group of talent under the radar. Mm. We weren't watching, because we just don't watch that much soccer, especially the American homegrown product. An American soccer fan tends to have a Premier League team more so than they have an MLS team. So this group that is so talented for the women has been allowed to gel as a unit in a way that is kind of away from that criticism structure. I mean, we only got to know a lot of the casual sports fans anyway, got to know these women's soccer players for the first time the last World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so good and so entertaining that we cut them more slack than we do other women. Like if you a lot of your points are taken in the field of tennis, where there's this double standard to where what you have to look like in order to get the endorsement deals versus what you have to look like to be good at the sport. Right. It's kind of a nightmare sociologically.
Mm-hmm.
But the
conversation sometime, right?
Yes.
Is women's tennis.
Yeah.
And when you see the way that this soccer team has been able to gel, and it's not just a bunch of name stars. There are name stars, but it's a great squad top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been able to develop a style and a personality and not have to resort to the flopping that you would see if they maybe had to win sooner.
I think that the way that they develop and the style of play is something that is, it's also shaped by the fact that the options for the professional leagues are very different between the men and the women. We'll get into that in one of my later points, but the national team is sort of the core of their development. National team and then college. Those are the key areas where these high level players are developing.
That's where they see the best coaches.
Yeah, as opposed to getting into like a professional team's system when you're 14 years old and being in that mix. It's a different structure. So anyway, yeah, flopping sucks. We hate it in basketball. We hate it in soccer. You'll see a lot less of it in the Women's
Casual
World Cup than you would in the men.
Casual fans will tune in.
Yeah, exactly.
Less flopping.
Yep. All right. So the next one touches on something that Nick was mentioning, which is that we got to know a lot of these people back in 2011. The American star players are not going to be new faces for the most part. So in many ways, I think they're much bigger stars. Their name recognition is bigger, and their level of individual skill is much greater than their equivalent on the men's national team. I mean, Abby Wambach is the leading goal scorer in international women's soccer history.
If you're asking me who my five favorite athletes in the world are right now, Steph Curry's on that list.
Mm-hmm.
Serena Williams is on that list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Abby Wambach is on that list. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to need a minute to think of the other two. But
yeah.
Abby
Ronda
Wambach.
Rousey.
Yeah, totally. But Abby Wambach is definitely there. She is awesome.
She's great. She is, I mean, because what do we look for, regardless of the sport we're talking about? We look for, exceptional talent, either exceptional just because of skill or because they don't fit in a box with anyone else. And Abby Wambach probably falls into both of those categories in terms of the exceptional skill, but also there just aren't a lot of players out there that have her physical mold and ability to just, take over a game like that and enforce her will.
But she also plays with an effort that a player that would need to make a team that doesn't have her skill.
Mm-hmm.
The way that a Kenneth Faried plays with effort in the NBA because he's not that good at basketball.
Right.
But she also happens to be among the best soccer players in the world, but she plays with that kind of effort.
Yeah.
That's exactly what American sports fans look for.
Absolutely. So she's been, she's arguably the greatest American soccer player in history, male or female.
Yeah.
But she has not yet won a World Cup. So, that's going to be the big story for her is can she, in order to take her rightful place in the pantheon of great soccer players, I think that there's a strong feeling that she needs to be able to put at least one World Cup on the mantle. And she's a little bit older this time around. Last World Cup, what was remarkable is that she played every single minute that we were on the field, which is just an insane feat of endurance. She's not going to do that this time around, but she'll still have her opportunity to get her big World Cup moments. But even beyond Abby Wambach, you've got Alex Morgan, who mm-hmm. is, obviously a very, very marketable star, but also an excellent player, and is someone else who has, came onto the national team scene at a very, very young age and is still looking for her first Women's World Cup. Hope Solo is a more divisive figure on and off the pitch.
That's a political way to say that.
Yeah. She's got, her critics, but there's no question she's one of the five most recognizable female athletes in America.
She's a dominant goalie.
And an absolute dominant goalie. And in the same way that Tim Howard, was able to be in some ways the most recognizable player on the men's team, we could see a similar performance from Hope Solo. And then, other people like Sydney Leroux, who's getting a lot of attention right now, is a really fun player.
Big up and comer last time was Megan Rapinoe.
Mm-hmm. Yep, who's back back for more. And then, you know, there are some women who are, this is their fourth go around. You know, folks have been around for a long time. But anyway, these are bigger stars than, you know, you go over to the men's side. And outside of Clint Dempsey and Tim Howard, there weren't many players on last year's team that had name recognition or face recognition to the casual fan.
Yeah, a lot of that conversation last time was around the guys who weren't there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, no Landon Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with Josie Altidore?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the names that we'd gotten used to that was like, this is going to be our time to dominate American pride.
Yeah.
And then they were just left off because they weren't cutting it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So the last men's World Cup felt like a kind of a missed opportunity, even though we played well and our stars played well. This doesn't feel like that's going to be the case for the women because, like you said, this is Abby Wambach's best shot
mm-hmm.
for her World Cup. She's going to be 4 years older the next time this comes around. Is the team going to be able to carry her in that Landon Donovan-esque role that she'll be in the next time, mm-hmm. or do we have to win now?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this is the chance. So we love being able to root for a team, but we need to be able to latch on to those individual players and personalities.
Sure.
We've got a lot of those here. Not only are they great, but also I think a lot of them are easier to identify with than some of the male athletes. And part of that is for the next reason on the list, which is the last reason, which is that men's soccer, though it's a great product, I love watching it. It is also thoroughly and completely monetized.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's in a way that has led to some news stories that soccer fans might not want to read about.
Exactly. And it's true off the field in terms of just the corruption that goes into determining how the bids are awarded and all that.
Qatar won fair and square.
Yeah. Right. Which is why we're going to have a World Cup in December. But also, the players who are competing in the men's World Cup, once that tournament is over, they go back to the European clubs where they're making 10, 12, 15 million pounds a year.
Cristiano Ronaldo is among the highest paid athletes in any sport.
Yeah.
Well, let me give you a good example using him, actually. So Cristiano Ronaldo, for his salary, let's take endorsements off the table.
Just
completely.
Pure sport gives you X dollars.
Exactly. Yeah. Just what Real Madrid pays him, you know, on a weekly basis. So he makes $356,000 per week. Okay. The National Women's Soccer League, which is the relatively new women's pro league in America that all the American stars play on, the salary cap per team, it's a 9-team league, per team, the salary cap is $265,000 for the season.
Oh,
wow.
So the max salary is $37,000. The minimum salary is $6,800. And these women who are playing in the World Cup and who have dedicated their lives to this sport, they're not doing it because if they have a good three-game stretch, they're going to be able to get that $356,000 a week.
No.
That is not out there for them. This is, you know, to the extent that part of the appeal of something like March Madness or the Summer Olympics.
College football.
Or college football is that we still sort of fetishize that idea of amateurism in sport. Even though these women are professionals, their lifestyles are a lot closer to being amateurs than what you would see from even, you know, the lowest level European men's players. And I think that it makes them both more relatable, but it ups the stakes because, you know, next week the Champions League final kicks off over in European soccer. And, you know, you compare that product to what's going on in the Men's World Cup, and there's actually probably more talent that'll be on the field in that match than there would be in any
more World concentrated.
Cup. More concentrated talent, yeah. And with more continuity of ability and all that, there's not an equivalent of that for women's soccer. This is the absolute pinnacle. And, I mean, is it unfair? Is this just a hot take to say that we care more when they're being paid less? Because I think that for whatever reason, as sort of strange as it is, I do think that we have a different relationship to it.
There's a sociological reason, I imagine, right? I mean, there is something to that. It hits me at a different level that, well, just when we had the Olympic basketball team that was amateurs as opposed to the professionals, it was just a different feel when they went out there and won compared to when the professionals win or lose. I mean, it just didn't matter. There's something that hits you at a different level. You appreciate it. They're more like you and me, they're living lives more like you and me, and that matters, right? Like that, I think that matters. They're not living in mansions. They're living in nice homes. They have to travel. Like you said, they dedicate their lives. And I know the males dedicate their lives to it too, but you're dedicating it for something more than just money and endorsements. Obviously, endorsements are barely there. You're doing it because just a passion for the game. It's kind of like why you go watch a single A game or in baseball or a double A game. It's just because you're going to see people playing with a lot of passion and you care about it.
Yeah, the like you mentioned, the stakes are so high. And with the amount of eyeballs that come to the Women's World Cup as opposed to any other organized tournament that any of the top women soccer players are going to play in, this is their shot to make that endorsement money.
Yeah.
This is the shot, like, somebody like Abby Wambach is now able to endorse things she otherwise wouldn't have gotten to endorse because of how many people watched the World Cup in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Same story for any of the other dominant personalities. So this is kind of an exciting opportunity where, as you mentioned, the money is just not there outside of these once every 4 years get-togethers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is going to be a huge event. I think it's so perfectly timed with what I think is going to be a disappointingly uncompetitive finals, because that's going to dominate. That's going to be like we mentioned earlier. That's a block of SportsCenter,
right?
Is whatever, however long that series goes. But the Women's World Cup is poised to be the dominant number one
really
sporting
is.
Event throughout the rest of June. It's just
baseball's not there the way it once was, even 15 years ago, right? I mean, baseball doesn't demand the attention that it
not day to day June baseball.
No, it really doesn't.
So that is the event. And I'm really excited. And those are five reasons to get pumped, because I think the Women's World Cup is going to be the thing to watch all month long.
I'm a lot more excited to watch it now, Matt.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you for those 5 points and giving me something to look for.
And I'm going to give a shout out to someone who may or may not listen. But my good friend Emily Witt, who's a friend of mine from college, played college soccer and is one of the biggest soccer fans I know and one of the best soccer players I know. She helped talk through some of these ideas with me and pointed out the statistic about flopping, which I had not encountered before. So thanks
which
to
was
Emily
an incredible
on the assist.
Stat. That blew my mind hearing that, right? But it also jives with everything I know. It
sure.
Made sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked the terminology of assist there. That was pretty slick. That's a professional sports and nonsense talk show that we have
here.
Segues, puns, we got it all here on Can't Wait.